is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
NATO, the Ukraine conflict together. In Ukraine, Russian troops withdraw from Ukraine's Snake Island. In NATO, Europe moves to defuse tension over Kaliningrad, the exclave that for now is cut off on the land bridge from Belarus to Kaliningrad by direction of Lithuania, a member of NATO. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He is in Britain, commenting on NATO's decisions in these last days and Ukraine conflict at the same time. These are not the same battle space, to use a popular metaphor. NATO is looking at a vast canvas and well into the 21st century. Ukraine is day-to-day and very much limited to the battlefront described as Donbass, and then the battlefront described as the Black Sea coastline of Ukraine. Anatole, I begin with NATO because it's much in the news. The remarks made in these last days by leaders of NATO meeting in Madrid are extremely aggressive about Russia. The aggression includes paragraphs that read this way: NATO does not seek confrontation and poses no threat to the Russian Federation. We will continue to respond to Russian threats and hostile actions in a united and responsible way. I ask you to project, how is that heard in Moscow, that they're not posing a threat given this long list of deployments, new deployments, including F-35 squadrons to Europe? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, I have to say that, viewed from Russia, this is pure hypocrisy. NATO has, on issue over issue, over the past 20 years, taken sides against Russia, in cases where it actually had no need whatsoever to do so, territorial disputes in the Caucasus and so on. Now, of course, on the other hand, very naturally, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has caused deep anxiety in Europe. Absolutely. On the other hand, I think, two things are worth noting. The first is that Russia, since the end of the Cold War, has never directly threatened not just the old core members of NATO as of 1989, but with the very partial exception of the Baltic states, has not threatened new members as well. There has never been a Russian threat to attack Poland, for example, at least not until the Ukraine war began. And even then, there's been no explicit threat. The other thing, I think, which is worth noting, is that, the Russian evacuation of Snake Island is only the latest in a whole row of Russian military failures in Ukraine. Russia has not yet succeeded, and almost certainly will not do so from now on, to capture a single one of its chief military objectives in Ukraine, in more than 3 months of war. If the Russian military isn't a paper tiger, it's, a smaller cat than the Russians thought it was, but also that NATO thought that it was. So that there's the question of, just how much of this NATO military buildup is actually necessary when it comes to deterring the Russian threat. Just at the moment, while they're pinned down in Ukraine, there seems to be no chance whatsoever that Russia could launch a ground attack on NATO. They just simply do not have the troops. They do, of course, have the missiles. That's a different matter.
The list of decisions made by NATO to deploy is long, so I'll just touch on what seems to be the most aggressive. A new permanent command post for the United States military in Poland. In addition, a rotational brigade combat team to Romania. In addition, more armored aviation, air defense, and special operation forces everywhere. Two more destroyers to rotate in and out of the Baltic Sea and the Black Sea to be based at Rota, Spain. Two squadrons of F-35s at an RAF field in the UK. And an unspecified number of additional air defense and other enablers. The Polish part of this is the most aggressive, because that's on the European plane on your road to Moscow if you're Napoleon or if you're the Wehrmacht. The same frontier faces Belarus, where we're told Belarus is now to be accept nuclear weapons, Lukashenko nuclear weapons, as part of the defenses of the Russian Federation. This list, it's a partial list, looks very much as if Moscow must answer. Do we expect that Moscow will answer by deploying over the time, not months, years, decades, along the frontier from the Baltic to the Black Sea? Are we looking at a militarized border, something like Hadrian's Wall 2,000 years ago?
Yes, we are. Maybe not Hadrian's Wall, but something, you know, very like the Cold War Iron Curtain between the Soviet bloc and the West, but of course moved hundreds of miles further east. I think, you know, once again, the only area where it is actually seriously important to have new NATO forces is the Baltic, because the Baltic states, you know, are the only NATO members where one can imagine Russia actually attacking them. So, you know, having, you know, at least enough forces to make sure that Russia can't just walk in. I mean, that is important. On the other hand, the European Union has made a very sensible decision, which, by the way, is in accordance with international law and their own, because, you know, their previous treaty with Russia, not to impose sanctions on Russian communications with Kaliningrad. Now, that's really important, because that was probably the biggest danger of an actual war, of Russia, you know, saying, look, sorry, we can't allow part of our territory to be blockaded. We're marching in. So thank God there are also, you know, sensible restraining factors in Western policy. But of course, I mean, for me, the biggest threat is not, you know, a ground war. As I say, you know, this is not the 1970s. You know, Russia does not have huge tank armies poised to invade Western Europe. It just doesn't. They don't exist. Many of them are dead and destroyed now in Ukraine. The biggest danger, it seems to me, it's unquantifiable, but you simply cannot deny it, is that amidst all this vastly heightened tension and the fact that, you know, NATO is totally engaged in supporting the Ukrainians, you know, against the Russian invasion, you know, there is the risk that there will be some unintended escalation. The Russians are clearly going to build up their nuclear forces. And that, you know, there will be the kind of disastrous miscalculation that, you know, a couple of times we only just avoided during the Cold War.
We have to teach ourselves that all over again, how close we came, 1962. I read from the NATO document, strategic concept. This is for decades, not for next month. The Russian Federation is modernizing its nuclear forces and expanding its novel and disruptive dual-capable delivery systems while employing coercive nuclear signaling. And hear about the addition of Sweden and Finland to NATO. It aims to destabilize countries to our east and south. In the high north, its capability to disrupt Allied reinforcements and freedom of navigation across the North Atlantic is a strategic challenge to the alliance. Moscow's military buildup, including the Baltic, Black, and Mediterranean Sea regions, along with its military integration with Belarus, challenge our security and interests. There's nothing halfway about this, if I read it correctly. What we're looking at is a hardening of a vast border. It's expensive. It's challenging. It means we're moving our conversation from diplomacy to military readiness. Is Europe, I'll ask you, is the UK ready for this? This is the atmosphere of 1940, not 2020.
Well, I mean, militarily speaking, I think we are seeing something very like what we saw again and again during the Cold War on the part of NATO and the West. You know, it's the missile gap phenomenon, a colossal exaggeration of the strength of the other side by way of justifying what, it, in retrospect, after the Cold War, turned out to be vastly exaggerated, you know, responses by NATO. I've been doing some math, for example, about the naval strength not including the United States, you understand, just of NATO's European members. Now, except in the area of submarines, the Europeans alone outnumber the Russian Navy by between 4 and 5 to 1. The idea of a pathetically small number of Russian warships in the Mediterranean, you know, compared even to the navies of Italy and France, you know, let alone, you know, all the rest of Europe, let alone the United States. Look, I mean, just looking at it in purely military terms, this is absurd. I mean, you know, you're talking about a mismatch of force of 20, 30 to 1. I mean, seriously? So, I mean, that's the first thing. Secondly, there is, even on the political front, there's a tremendous exaggeration of the Russian threat. There hasn't been any serious Russian attempt to destabilize Romania, for example. In Bulgaria, you have an old tradition, an old cultural and historical tradition of pro-Russian feeling. That wasn't created by Putin. That originated in the 18th century, for God's sake. There hasn't, you know, the Russians had many opportunities to stir up the Russian-speaking population of the Baltic states to try to, you know, fake terrorist attacks, whatever. They haven't done it. And, you know, the idea that it is Russia that is responsible for the rise of right-wing extremism in Europe, or, dare I say it, in the United States, when you look at all the domestic reasons for this, Russia's role is utterly peripheral, you know, there. So I think, you know, there's a, I mean, look, I understand it. I mean, obviously, Russia, once again, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has caused absolute horror and anxiety, and quite rightly so. Certainly the moral horror is totally justified. But stepping back a bit and trying to look at this, you know, just objectively in terms of pure, you know, military and political threat to the West or to NATO, it's very difficult to see anything that justifies this kind of language on the part of the NATO alliance.
The NATO alliance also speaks of climate change. And when we come back, anticipating not only the balance of the century for global temperatures, but also the heating of homes and businesses in the winter of 23 without adequate energy sources from the foe, Russia. When we come back, this is Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.